The next matter for us this morning is the Office of Ohio Consumer Counsel versus PUCO. Ms. Grady, when you're ready.
Good morning. Chief Justice Brown, may it please the court. I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my argument time for rebuttal. My remarks this morning will be directed solely to the issue of newspaper notice as contained in OCC Proposition of Law Number 1. OCC will rely upon its brief for the due process issues regarding notice presented in OCC Proposition of Law Number 2. We will not re-argue the merits of the straight fixed variable rate design as contained in Propositions of Law 3, 4, and 5. As indicated in our filed list of additional authorities, we recognize that this court's holding in the Duke and DEO appeals is controlling of these issues. The sole question presented this morning, Your Honors, is, did Vectren's newspaper notice convey the impact of the substance of the Stage 2 rates to its customers so that customers could understand the impact and the implications of the Stage 2 increase and decide whether to object?
Ms. Brady, let me, and I want to hear the argument that you're going to present, but I want to ask, I mean, if we accept the argument that the notice was insufficient, what's the practical consequences of this matter being reheard?
The practical consequence is, Your Honor, we are requesting that the court vacate the Stage 2 rates and re-implement the Stage 1 rates with a customer charge of $13.37 and a volumetric charge of 0.07451 cents per CCF. That would be the practical consequence. We contend, Your Honor, that the PUCO was without jurisdiction to approve the Stage 2 rates. The two statutes, mandatory statutes at issue, Your Honor, are 4909-19 and 4909-18E. Under 4909-19, the utility must convey the substance and prayer of its proposal to its customers through the newspaper notice. Under 4909-18E, the utility must include in that notice the average percent increase in rates that customers will bear if the utility's proposal is granted in full. OCC contends that Vectren failed to comply with these provisions. Does it matter that the newspaper notice provisions of the code were not complied with? Yes, Your Honors, it does. Laws were broken. Laws that guarantee a process for customers to voice their opinions and objections to a utility rate increase. Public participation is a fundamental cornerstone to the rate-making process in Ohio. The General Assembly recognized this when it drafted Title 49 and input into Title 49 numerous opportunities for public participation and mandated that all proceedings at the public utility shall be public proceedings.
Did your office raise that with the members at the hearing before the PUCO?
Yes, Your Honor.
At what point?
Your Honor, in June, going back in July of 2008, OCC filed objections to the staff report, and in those objections made the point that the Stage 2 rates were not properly noticed. In addition, Your Honor, the financial auditor of the commission in June of 2008 pointed out the deficiencies of the notice. So the commission,
when was the date of the hearing?
Your Honor, the evidentiary hearing began in August, and the public hearings began in September.
Okay.
The commission issued its order in January of 2009. So the commission had the notice of the defect, and they had the opportunity to correct it, but they did not.
Was it ever addressed?
No, Your Honor, it was not. This is a question of law. The court has complete and independent power of review here. We ask, Your Honor, that the Stage 2 rates be vacated and the Stage 1 rates be re-implemented.
Wasn't there a finding in January of 2008 by the commission that the notice was sufficient and that 3 days later there was the publication, but there was no objection by OCC at that time, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor, that the PUCO did approve the notice. We contend, Your Honor, however, that the notice issue is a jurisdictional issue, as this court opined in Duff versus PUCO. There, this court said that 4909.19 is jurisdictional. That is, if the commission wants to obtain jurisdiction over the Stage 2 rates, it must ensure that the PUCO complies with the provisions of the statute. And the PUCO here did not. It did not require Vectren to convey the substance and prayer of the proposal and the impact of that proposal on customers' rates.
So all this happened in January, and the first objection was filed in July, is that what you're saying, or August?
Your Honor, OCC was not aware of the defects of the notice in January. It, however, did raise this in July, as well as the financial auditor raised it in June. This court has held in Time Warner, in the Time Warner case cited in OCC briefs and as well as others, if an issue is jurisdictional, there can be no untimely raising of that issue.
But if they began publishing, if Vectren began publishing their notices in January and you were able to see those notices, you could detect, in your opinion, that they weren't sufficient and could have filed your objection back then when they first began publishing those notices. Why did it take till July to figure it out?
Your Honor, the rate-making process in Ohio is very complex. Vectren filed an 800-page application with 16 filed testimonies of expert witnesses. We were deep in the analysis, Your Honor. And at the first point that we became aware of the notice issue, we did file objections, as well as the financial auditor who published in a published report, notified the commission that there was a problem with the notice.
If you didn't see the notices when they were published, what difference would it have made what was in them?
Your Honor, the statute.
You didn't see them then. You didn't see them until you figured it out in July. So if they had done the proper notice in January, we wouldn't have seen it either.
Your Honor, the statutes 4909.18 and 19 require that the substance and the prayer be conveyed to customers, and we contend that the substance and prayer was never conveyed to customers. In this case, Your Honor, Vectren materially proposed to change how it collects rates from customers, from its 290,000 residential customers. Justice Pfeiffer in the Duke and DEO appeals referred to this as a sea change. Vectren proposed two stages of the straight fixed variable rate design, with two separate customer charges, two separate volumetric rates, and implemented at two separate times. The Stage 1 rates were properly noticed, but the Stage 2 rates, which were an integral part of the rate application, were not properly noticed.
When were those Stage 2 rates going to be in effect?
Your Honor, under the Commission's order, they were approved and put into effect on February of 2010. It is undisputed that the single sentence notice of Stage 2 rates was as follows, and this was the complete notice of Stage 2 rates. And I quote, it is found at OCC Supplement 125. Vito proposes changes to the rate design to rates 310, residential sales, and rates 315, residential transportation, that initiate a gradual transition to a straight fixed variable rate design. John Q. Public, reading the Sydney Daily News or the Hillsborough Time Gazette, could not possibly have known the implications of the Stage 2 rates from that single sentence. There was no mention of the substance of the proposal.
What do you propose that sentence should have said?
Your Honor, that proposal, in order to provide the substance, should have conveyed the customer charge, should have conveyed the volumetric rate, and should have conveyed when those increases were to take effect. And similarly, under 4909.18e, that notice had to contain the percentage increase that customers would see if the rate increase was adopted in full. None of these were provided by that notice. That single sentence notice told customer only that a proposal exists, and an incomprehensible proposal at best, using terms like straight fixed variable rate design that customers could not understand, and it was customers to whom the notice was directed. What did the PUCO do? The PUCO approved the notice. The Stage 2 rates were approved and put into effect in February of 2010. Customers saw not one customer charge increase, but two customer charge increases, and the second one was not properly noticed. Your Honors, OCC contends that the notice was deficient as a matter of law because it failed to comply with the statutes. It did not convey the substance, and it did not convey the percentage increase to customers. What good is notice if not to inform? Merely mentioning that a straight fixed variable proposal exists is not sufficient. That does not convey the substance, and it does not convey the impact. Here, instead of simply notifying customers of the substance of its Stage 2 proposal, Vectren would have its customers scour through an 800-page application to determine what the straight fixed variable proposal was and how it impacted their rates, and then make a decision as to whether to object. 80 years ago, when the General Code Provision 614-20 was in effect, notice that a proposal existed was sufficient. But not today. The General Assembly amended those provisions and required more, requiring that the substance and prayer of the proposal and that the percentage increase be conveyed, and Vectren's notice simply did not comply.
Counsel, it seems that you wish to add to the statute and that it be understandable to consumers. Is that basically what you're saying here, that it needed to be understandable to someone who read the notice, who might not have had the technical expertise, and otherwise it's not conveying the substance of the proposal?
Yes, Your Honor, and I would say that we are not trying to add to the statute. We are trying to make the statute a living statute. That is, we want the intent of the statute was that customers be given the opportunity to object to a proposal. And if they don't know what the proposal is, they certainly cannot exercise their opportunity to object. And that was the problem here. Not only was it incomprehensible, but it didn't describe anything. Customers could not tell what that proposal meant. Your Honors, it's like holding an election and placing issues on the ballot and not telling the voters what those issues are. So the voters go election day and they don't know whether they should show up and push the button and exercise their right to vote.
Have you ever asked the PUCO to reconsider its decision on the notice?
Your Honor, we did raise the issue in our objections and at the hearing. We also briefed the issue, and we did ask them. We asked in our objections that the commission reissue the notice.
If I have the sequence correctly, it was first proposed by Vectren in January, and your first objection is in July?
That is correct. That is when we became aware that the notice was defective. Your Honor, we ask that this court send a message to the PUCO that the process required by the statute cannot be ignored, that it is important.
Counsel, you're asking us to send a message. Is this a recurring problem at the PUCO? Are there notices, in your view, generally defective in what they should be requiring?
Your Honor, I'd rather not speculate as to whether the notices in general are problematic, but I would say this notice...
Well, are you familiar with other cases?
Your Honor, I am aware of the notice issues in other cases. They do present problems. Customers should be able to understand notice. In order to be able to publicly participate with this, which this General Assembly recognized...
I'm sorry, but I'm not asking the policy question of whether they should be able. I'm asking whether, in your view, the Public Utilities Commission's approved notices for these rate changes comport with the statute or do not as a general matter?
As a general matter, I would agree that they do not comport. However, this is one of the first cases that we've taken this issue up because we feel so strongly that the notice did not convey and deprived customers of the opportunity to object. Your Honors, I would
is
like to...
Is that a discretionary determination on the part of the PUCO as to whether the notice complies with 4909.18 and 19? Is that in their discretion?
Your Honor, determining whether or not the notice is appropriate falls within the discretion of the PUCO. However, the PUCO cannot ignore the law and ignore the requirements of the law that state clearly that the substance and prayer of the proposal be conveyed to customers and that the impact, the percentage increase impact be conveyed. The PUCO here did not follow the law.
So best stated, it would be an abuse of discretion of the PUCO if, in fact, you haven't waived it by tardy presentation of the issue.
Your Honor, I see my time is up. May I take
please.
A moment to answer?
Yes.
Your Honor, we believe that the statutes were violated as a matter of law because the PUCO absolutely failed to enforce those statutes. They're mandatory, they're jurisdictional, they're important to follow, and they were not followed. We ask that this court vacate the PUCO's order. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grady. Mr. Margard?
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice Brown, Honorable Justices of the Supreme Court, good morning. May it please the Court. Seated at council table with me this morning is Gretchen Hummel, who is counsel on behalf of Vectren Energy Delivery of Ohio, and I would like to yield 4 minutes of my time to her for argument this morning. Your Honors, this case involves the shift to the straight-fixed variable rate design. It's the third such case that's been brought to your consideration. As Ms. Grady indicated, in a case that this court issued in January of this year, this court issued a ruling which is essentially dispositive of all of the issues raised in this case. And with respect to the notice issue that OCC brings to the court this morning, I think it's critical that this court recognize that there is no person or no party before this court that did not have actual, complete, thorough knowledge and notice of all of the aspects contained in this company's application. Indeed, OCC fully participated in every aspect of this case, having intervened before the notice was even proposed and having, as Ms. Grady indicated to you, fully participated in the litigation and the briefing of this case.
Counsel, when she makes a strong argument that this notice is for the John Q. public to understand, in your experience, has anybody who has not been associated with a business or an entity or the OCC Council, an average Joe from John Q. Public come and made a statement or a protest in one of these cases?
Yes, Your Honor. Members of the public frequently appear and intervene on their own behalf because they have unique individual interests which are perhaps beyond the scope of OCC's representation or even in cases where OCC does not itself intervene in the case.
Did you in this case?
No, Your Honor, the individual members of the public did not intervene in this case, but it is critical to recognize that OCC, as this court noted in the Duke and Dominion cases that it issued in January of this year, that OCC is the statutory representative of John Q. Public. It is the statutory representative of the residential consumers.
So are you arguing then that if OCC understands what this rate case is about, that cures any deficiency in the notice?
I would say, Your Honor, that that's exactly what this court found in the Duke and Dominion cases. In fact, by saying that OCC was actively involved in the case, had an opportunity to voice its concerns about the SFE rate design, had an opportunity to fully participate in the case, that it completely undercut all of its arguments with respect to the notice in those cases. And I'd suggest that the issue is no different in this case. But beyond that, Your Honor.
Mr. Margard, if I understand what you're saying, that OCC is the statutory representative of John Q. Public, then wouldn't this notice provision actually be irrelevant? Wouldn't it be just as simple to say that Vectron must provide notice to OCC, and they could do so in a way that is far more technical than John Q. Public necessarily understands and gives full disclosure, and the issues about understandability are not an issue anymore?
Your Honor, if the issues in a case were strictly limited to OCC, that might be a solution that could be considered. I think in the first instance, it's important to recognize that, in fact, actual notice was served directly upon OCC in this case. Because of their early intervention before the application was filed, they were served with the proposed notice well before the Commission ever undertook to consider whether it was adequate to restate the substance. But it's also important to recognize that there are a number of other customers who are affected by the company's proposal. And it's for that purpose, for all of the customers who might be affected, that the company publishes notice. In fact, the notice consisted of 15 pages in the company's application. It's incredibly detailed. It's incredibly thorough. And as this Court has indicated in the past.
But what's there with respect to this Stage 2 plan? I mean, is there something more in that notice beyond what Ms. Grady has cited, has read to us as a sentence that I'm not sure that I understand?
Well, Your Honor, I would suggest in the first instance that OCC has acknowledged that this notice conferred jurisdiction on the Commission for purposes of the Stage 1 rates. There's no question that the public was put on notice that there was some reason for them to intervene and get involved in this case. With respect to the Stage 2 rates, there's no practical different effect on customers between Stage 1 and Stage 2. It's just a balance. The customer doesn't end up paying anything differently between the two different stages. It's just a shift in the way in which the money is collected. So in terms of the rate impact, it actually is more than adequately stated in the current notice. But even more important than that, Your Honor, despite what Ms. Grady indicated to you this morning, the Commission did not adopt the company's Stage 2 rates. The company adopted a rate plan that was different than that proposed by the company for its Stage 2 rates. And as this Court has acknowledged, that where a Commission adopts a proposal different than that proposed by the company can't possibly be expected to include that as part of its notice. In addition, the public was on notice, because it's contained in the company's notice, that the Commission could alter the rate design or could alter the rates proposed by the company. And that's exactly what happened in this case.
So the language variable rate design in the notice is designed to put a reader on notice that they should inquire as to what that means?
It's more than just that particular phrase, although that phrase should certainly alert somebody that here's something I don't know about and I ought to find out more about. It's the fact that the company indicated,
I don't understand what they're talking about and I'll never understand what they're talking about. Wouldn't that be what the normal reader would think?
And that ought to be sufficient basis for a reader to inquire further. And that's the Court's standard here, not that the customer understand all of the intricacies and all of the impacts that the rate design will have on them, but rather that sufficient information is conveyed that somebody who might be affected would be led to inquire further or seek to intervene in the case. And that's precisely what happened in this instance. But more than just the word straight fixed variable, it's important to recognize that what the notice said is that the company was proposing a change in the rate design to a straight fixed variable. So there was not just words, but words that indicated that there was a change in a rate design that would affect customers. Furthermore, the company in its notice indicated that this was the beginning of a gradual transition to a straight fixed variable rate design, that this was the start of a process of a series of changes. That, in addition to the mention of the change itself, was more than adequate for the public to be aware, or for any customer to be aware, that there was reason for them to intervene and be involved in this case. In fact, the Commission found in this case that Vito had provided more than sufficient information, not only of the proposal of a new rate design, but for customers to inquire further if they had additional questions. There's no question that this notice provided the substance and the prayer of what was contained in this application. 750-page application, 15 pages of that application consisting of the newspaper notice. Counsel for the company is going to show you the scope of that newspaper notice, which is extensive. There's simply no way that the court can undertake to examine each and every possible change in a rate proposal and expect that to somehow be summarized and conveyed.
What's the one sentence that counsel read then claimed that was the extent of the notice? What was that, if you're saying there's a 15-page?
Well, the specific notice, the specific sentence, Your Honor, is that additionally, Vito proposes changes to the rate design for residential sales service and residential transportation service that initiate a gradual transition to a straight fixed variable rate for distribution service. That's the sentence I believe she was referring
to. That part of 15 pages that was published, or only that sentence was published?
Oh, no, Your Honor, that's part of the 15 pages that was published. The 15 pages, of course, affect all of the different customer classes and include all of the different rate changes and all of the different tariff changes that are going to affect all of the company's customers.
So, Mr. Margard, what the statute actually says regarding the notice is the requirement that there be the substance and the prayer. And it doesn't have language that says the notice shall be understandable to the general public, for example.
Exactly so, Your Honor. In fact, what the statute says is that in order to confer jurisdiction, essentially that there has to be notice proposed, that it has to be approved in a form acceptable to the commission, and that the notice has to have been actually published. And all of those things, in fact, occurred in this case.
And in this case, then, the residential customer whose interest is being represented by the Ohio Consumer Council, they have their representative involved in the process, and they were involved in this process from the beginning.
From the very beginning, Your Honor. Absolutely. No question about that. It involved in every aspect, literally hundreds of interrogatories, hundreds of requests for production, dozens of depositions, including submitting expert testimony themselves.
Counsel, I'm interested in pursuing a matter that goes beyond, and I've started to think about it, going back to the other case. The underlying case and the move the commission has made has been explained to us is the gas companies were experiencing erosion of customer demand or erosion of customers.
Ultimately, erosion of their revenue stream. Yes.
Yes. And so, setting what the allowing them a reasonable rate of return became problematic for the commission looking out into the future, unless you changed the way you did it. And hence, this style of recovery for the fixed costs and the operational costs was selected as a reasonable way to provide stability on rate of return, as I understand it. And it may or may not be — it is somewhat problematic in terms of fairness to the apartment dweller who lives in a very small unit compared to the homeowner who lives in a McMansion. But we're really nibbling away at the edges of the cost of heating one's residence. The real cost is gas. And gas, I follow it, is at a historic — natural gas is pretty much at historic lows right now.
Actually, gas is quite affordable at the moment.
Yes. Okay. Well, where I'm going is that here's the Consumers Council, here's the Public Utilities Commission, and the statutory structure that you have now and what I'm urging you to think about is getting together instead of fighting over insignificant matters, approaching the legislature about some changes in the statute that give incentives to the companies to capture and protect these low rates for the foreseeable future for homeowners. And to watch, for example, yesterday, the spot price on 100 cubic feet was about 35 cents. The Vectren for this last month was charging 54 cents for that gas. And that doesn't count the transmission charges and all of the other things. So, I expect the commission is looking at that on a regular basis. They're charged to do that, to see what's going on. The Dispatch just had an article this weekend about the fact that the so-called competitive alternatives appear to be far from competitive and may be seriously overpriced. Those are the big issues. Those are the things that involve the dollars that affect customers. And I guess I'm urging you, because all we can do is look at the narrow legal issues that are presented to us. It's frustrating.
It is, Your Honor, and I recognize that, and I'd like to believe that these series of cases were one of the steps that is designed to do precisely that. But clearly, and as Veterans' own brief indicated, this has been a long series of discussions and ongoing collaboratives over a period of years to try to come up with a reasonable solution, and I assure you.
Yeah, but I mean, when you look at the futures price on natural gas going out as far as the eye can see, you're going out almost 5 years. You have to go almost 5 years out before you get it to the point where it's 70 cents or $7.
Highly variable market, Your Honor.
But it's at lows right now, and there is no incentive for the gas company to do anything but have the executives come in, eat, burp, and go home, because it's a pass-through. They're not incentivized to look out there and say, hey, the market, we can buy gas, we can lock it up at really low prices. But we don't have to, because each month we can just say, well, this is what it costs us this month, pay it to the consumer. So there needs to be a sea change, I think, in terms of legislation to give the commission and the Consumers Council some ability to help the consumer by capturing the advantage of low prices as they exist now. I assume the argument against that is a number of years ago, 20 or 30 years ago, the gas companies got caught with take or pay at very high prices. And when the prices dropped, then there was a lot of squawking about that. But that's not where we are today, and it seems like nobody's paying attention to that. We're squawking about $20 a month instead of the hundreds that are in the consumer's gas bill.
I certainly hope the General Assembly is paying attention, Your Honor.
It's up to the Commission and the Consumers Council to get after them to do that.
We believe that we're trying to do our part.
Thank you. Ms. Hummel, you may have your 4 minutes.
Good morning, Chief Justice Brown and Honorable Justices. May it please the Court, my name is Gretchen Hummel, and I'm here on behalf of Vectren Energy Delivery of Ohio, Inc. I thought you might like to see the actual notice that was published in the newspaper. This is the notice that was approved by the Commission. It was published in 18 newspapers once a week for 3 consecutive weeks. This was the notice that was proposed in the application to which Mr. Margard referred. It was actually served on Consumers Council in November of 2007 rather than January, and was then approved by the Commission in January and subsequently.
How many citizens by letter, by contact, or phone call responded to that notice?
By letter, Your Honor, I would tell you that 58 customers mailed letters to the Commission addressing the issues proposed in the case, and all of those letters were docketed in the docket in this case. The Commission held 4 local public hearings.
I assume you looked at those. Did the scriveners of those letters seem to understand what the principal issue was or what the change was that was being proposed?
It's hard for me to divine whether or not they understood it, but a significant number of the letters actually addressed the change in the rate design. Yes, Your Honor, they did. There were 4 local public hearings held at which 18 customers actually testified, and the vast majority of those customers also addressed the rate design issue in this proceeding.
Ms. Hummel, with this example that you – I mean, if this is the notice, where in the notice can you point to where the Stage 2 design is described?
No, Your Honor, because the Stage 2 – as Consumers Council has explained, Stage 2 rates were not included in the notice. Stage run rates were, and I have highlighted in blue the sentence to which everyone is referring, wherein the company indicated that it was proposing a gradual transition in the residential rate distribution rate design to a straight fixed variable rate. And in the very second paragraph, I would like you to note that that big paragraph contains a number of ways that consumers can actually reach out to find out more information about the application and the contents of the application, including on the websites and various websites and at the company's offices.
Counsel, that is a very big paragraph, but it's not big enough for me to read. Can you help me by telling me where in the record this notice can be found?
Yes, quickly? Your Honor. This is company exhibit number 19. It was identified in the very first transcript, and it was admitted into evidence in transcript number 8 on page 14.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I would like to indicate, in addition, in response to some of your questions, in addition to the Consumers Council, residential consumers were also represented in this proceeding by the Ohio Partners for Affordable Energy, so they had more than one lawyer in the case. That I want to point out that I think it's very important that Consumers Council has claimed, has not been able to demonstrate that residential consumers were in any way harmed by the Commission's determination in this case. The fact of the matter is that in addition to being fully represented in the case and having participated by letter and at local public hearings, that the residential customers were assigned a specific revenue requirement by stipulation.
Ms. Hummel, if we assume that the notice is defective,
yes,
and didn't provide adequate notice, would that be sufficient to warrant this court reversing, or does it necessary for us first to find that there was in fact harm?
I believe that the commission has indicated previously that harm has to be demonstrated in order for you to consider overturning a commission decision. I also believe that you've indicated that you will not substitute the court's discretion for that of the commission in matters, technical matters, and the commission determined exercised the discretion that the General Assembly gave it pursuant to 4909.19 to determine that this notice was indeed adequate and consistent with the court's previous standard, provided sufficient information for customers to determine whether or not they wanted to inquire further or to intervene in the case. Additionally, I think that the very magnitude of the notice itself points out the wisdom of the court's finding in the MRT case, wherein you said it would be highly impractical and unnecessarily expensive in order to require that every specific detail affecting the rates proposed in a rate application need to be included in the notice.
Counsel, you said there's no harm. There is in this shift in the way the companies recover their fixed costs. There is individualized harm. The small consumer is going to pay more, and the larger residential consumer is going to pay less toward the fixed costs. So the smaller consumer takes somewhat of a hit, but the commission decided that formula is the best way to assure the appropriate rate of return, which the company necessarily must have to function efficiently and deliver a product in a timely and safe manner. So some customers are harmed by this, but the commission in its wisdom, and we approved that in the prior case.
I believe my time's up, Your Honor. May I respond?
You may respond to the question.
Thank you, sir. In order to find that the straight fixed variable rate design harms low users, one would have to decide or accept that a customer should not pay his fair share of the fixed cost. The flat rate to which you refer, Your Honor, is
okay,
recovering.
Okay, well, let's throw out the word harm. Some customers, the smaller, those who use the least gas, are going to have an increase in their bill. Whether you call that harm or not, they're the ones that are going to be affected by this change.
That's correct, Your Honor, which is precisely why the company proposed to gradually transition to the change as opposed to flash cutting to the change. And as counsel for the commission observed, the ultimate decision of the commission for the stage two rate was to impose a flat rate rather than the stage two rates that were proposed in the application. And I'd like to just like to observe that the average residential customer will pay the same regardless of whether the company's proposed stage one, stage two rates are imposed or whether the commission's flat rate is imposed. That the residential, the average residential customer's bill is no different, as the record reflects.
Well, now you're talking the aggregate.
Excuse me?
You're talking the aggregate now instead of the individual
consumer. No, sir, I'm talking the average residential customer who consumes 815 MCF a year will pay the same regardless of what rate design is imposed.
Thank you, Ms. Hummel. Just one very quick question. You used a word that I didn't catch. Instead of a gradual transition, did you say flash cutting?
Oh, I meant if the commission were to impose the flat rate on the date of its order as opposed to transitioning to it in the
second
year.
What was the word you used?
Flash cut.
Okay.
Apologize.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Grady, 2 minutes.
Your Honor, very quickly, we'd like to make 3 points. First of all, OCC's participation as the representative of the residential customer class is separate and distinct from the individual customer opportunities to participate under 4909, 18, and 19. When OCC was enacted in 1976, the General Assembly did not repeal, revoke, or amend any of the public participation statutes, including 4909, 18, and 19. We believe this shows the intent that those are separate and distinct from any OCC representation of the customer class as a whole. Secondly, Your Honor, no matter how lengthy the exhibit is and how many pages are contained, whether it's 15, whether it's 20, whether it's 50, if that does not convey the substance and the prayer of the Stage 2 rate proposal, it is defective under the law. It simply did not comply, no matter how long it was. Customers could not understand that notice. And third, Your Honors, harm, yes, there was harm. There was harm not only to the customers who were denied their opportunity to participate on an individual basis, but there was harm to the process. The rate-making process was not carried out here. Under 4909, 18, and 19, a utility can seek to increase rates to customers. It can seek hundreds of millions of dollars from customers every year, but one of the provisions that the General Assembly deemed very important was in that process, customers had to know what the utility was asking for. And that's all we're asking for here. Your Honor, respectfully, we ask that you fulfill the intent of the legislature by breathing life into 4909, 18, and 19. We ask that you ensure the integrity of the process by protecting the public's individual right to participate in the proceedings. And, Your Honor, respectfully, we request that this court just say no to a rate-making process that was not lawfully carried out.
Counsel, before you sit down, did the Consumers Council propose an alternate notice at any time?
Your Honor, at various stages we did, Your Honor. We, in our objections to the staff report, we had a proposed notice for the staff report, which would have alternatively explained the differences.
We can find that in the OCC, yes, Your Honor. Objections to the staff report? Or?
Yes, Your Honor. The objections to the staff report are found in the record 55 at 29. Along with the proposed public notice. But again, that was the public notice for the public hearings. That's a different notice.
Okay. Did you propose a notice for the one that you're saying it's defective.
No, Your Honor, for the jurisdictional notice, we did not.
Right, so we would not be able to find in the record what you think would be sufficient?
Your Honor, you would be able to see what we objected to in the staff report with respect to the public notice for the public hearings. You would not find in the record what our proposal would have been on the jurisdictional and mandatory newspaper notice. But we submit, Your Honor, that the newspaper notice, in order to convey the substance and to comply with 4909.18 and 19, should have had what the customers could understand. That is, when a customer looks at their bill, what do they want to know? They want to know what the bottom line is. What's that customer charge? What's the volumetric rate? When is the rate going to go into effect? And what is the percentage increase that I am going to see when I open up that bill? If Your Honors have no further questions, I will conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brady. Court's going to take a short break.